Remember, come forward, give us your full name and address, and sign into the sheet that's at the podium, please.
My name is Dan Kramer, 8041 Scott Store Road, Greenwood. Now, they want to say that, oh, you have final say on all zoning changes? Oh, yeah, that part's actually true. If you want a zoning change, you will have final say on that property. But will it get built? No. Why not? Because at any given time, you, the county, cannot issue a building permit without kissing them. Pure and simple. So how can you say, first of all, I'm going to tell you what, you guys, before you vote on this thing, better go home and sleep on this thing and really look at it before you even think about it. And furthermore, you might want to say we go home and stay there because they have control. You don't have control. Not at all. Pure and simple. Final say is not you guys. Final say is them. Because you can't get a building permit. Now, let's look at Title 9. Chapter 69, 62. What does it say? It requires you guys to have an MOU. Only for one purpose, for rezoning, nothing else at all. So why are we looking at a whole bunch of garbage that they added up and say, well, it's the Delmont Mandel. I don't care about the Delmont Mandel. It don't mean a hill of beans to me. Who are they to tell anybody? I'm going to give you an example. A few years back before you time, there was a guy came in and wanted a conditional use, and he told me he was going to buy this piece of land on 404. And I told him, I says, you going to put a business there? He said, yeah. I said, well, you know you got to have a conditional use and change the zone or whatever. He didn't even realize that. And he was lucky that he did not sign for he was forced to buy the piece of land. So it was on condition. So he came in, and I thought they would never pass it, but he got the conditional use. But they told him they had to go to the highway department. So he goes to the highway department, ask for an entrance permit. Oh, you want an entrance permit? $50,000. Okay, what does he do? He says, I don't need you guys. He goes to Maryland, sets up a business over there. Now who just lost? The seller, the county, the whole getting the boodle, the whole state lost because of the idiots from Delmont. And I won't pull no punches. They are idiots. Always have been, always will be. Now, let's go back. Let's take other zonings that have already occurred. Let's use C1, for example. Is it closed district? There is no more C1s, except the ones that are already there. Prior. Let's say you got a store or some kind of business. Now there's 100, 200, 300 items on C1 given. Not conditioned use, but given. Given the right. So when you want to go and change that property, you just might have to come back to Delmont to kiss them and spend a lot of money to see if they're going to give you an entrance permit or a whole kit and boodle, TIS, whatever you want to call it. It could take years for you even to see daylight if you ever see it. And you probably won't see it. And I agree, I think you said something about the entrances, if they've already been built and you want to change, you got to tear out an entrance and put in another one. Here a few years back, a doctor that I know had a piece of land he wanted to do something on. And he told me, he said he had spent $150,000 for his entrance and he still hadn't got it. He was about ready to give up on it. Now, how asinine is that? And by the way, under what authority do they have the right to tell a developer or a landowner, oh, you want an entrance? We want 15 feet of your frontage. Who are you to tell me I got to give you 15 feet for my entrance? That's my property, not theirs. So I don't get it. There's a whole lot of stuff that I don't get. Under what authority do they have for any of this stuff? Just because they got a manual? That manual, as far as I'm concerned, they can waive it with it. Very simple. Because it's worth, if you give them this pass, this thing, like I said, you might as well go home. In fact, what you guys just introduced this afternoon, it may, if you sign that sucker today or pass it, may end up they can't get built whatever they wanted. So you better think real hard before you think about passing the thing out the way it's written. Because they have final say, not you.
Does anyone else like to speak on this matter, Mr. Horsey?
Good afternoon. My name is Bobby Horsey. I reside at 14819 Sycamore Road, Laurel, Delaware. First of all, I want to thank Vince and the Planning and Zoning Board for listening to us at that long public hearing that night and taking some of our recommendations in order, and we do appreciate it, Vince. I saw the red line up on the screen. I do just want to remind everybody, I think most of the stuff in here is under recommendation, but as long as this document doesn't impact our property rights and our economic growth of Sussex County, please keep that in mind for whatever you use this document for. We don't want to impact people's property rights or the economic engine that Sussex County does have. You know, we don't want to use this document to stop growth. It's a good tool to manage growth, but it's not a good tool to stop growth. Lastly, as a matter of practicality, I forgot to bring paper, so I had to write the number. Number 12. And I'm going to ask Vince to come up here, because if we could have Vince answer a question. At the public hearing on planning and zoning, this was one of my topics, was the phasing. And I think this is number 12. It's number 12 phasing.
Yeah, it's one of them.
Yep. So number 12, the phasing. Phasing in Sussex County is already complicated. You know, we got soil conservation phasing plans, we got sewer phasing plans that sometimes are the Sussex County sewer, sometimes it's Tidewater sewer, sometimes it's Artesian sewer. They don't always overlap with the Sussex County conservation plans. Then you throw on the road Ordinance 99 plans that have most time have a separate phasing of its own. You know, and all this stuff is derived by practicality, how it works, you know. My challenge with that is you're asking for another plan, which is a delta phasing plan. Yes, today we got it, but it's in between developers, contractors, and the department. That's how we build our projects. But to make that a requirement of a land use, I feel that's the wrong thing to do. It's adding another layer of burden onto the landowners and developers and contractors, in my opinion. But if this is a recommendation, I thought I read in there somewhere that it's a requirement for final subdivision approval.
Well, if it was recommended and it was incorporated into an approval, then it would be on the final site plan.
Okay, so, but that, I think it states that it has to be submitted somewhere.
I'll take a look at that, because it would only have to be if it was a requirement of.
Right, if it becomes a requirement.
Yeah, right.
But, so I'm going to give you some practical examples. Try not to mention any names. We're working on a subdivision that the plans were all approved, and DLDOT phasing plan was laid out phase 1, 2, and 3. But because of the economic driver of the project, and then the biggest challenge is other parties that nobody in this room controls, which is public utilities. The developers had to change the sequence in the phasing plan in order to match how they're constructing the project. So they had to go back to DLDOT in several meetings. I think they resolved it last week. But in order to make the project financially viable, does that mean that developer would then have to add another process and come back through planning and zoning or county council for a public hearing or a site plan review?
If the phasing numbers were incorporated into the decision, you know, like it was, you know, I don't know what, 200 units before certain road improvements happen, then yes, they would have to come back in.
So, and that's where I was going. That's what I mentioned at the county, planning and zoning. I would rather see it attached to building permits versus calling it phasing. Because when people think about phasing, they think about a blueprint that shows, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z this time, X, Y, and Z this time, and X, Y, and Z this time. And that was a specific blueprint on this particular job that was a specific phasing plan approved by DLDOT. But because of elements out of the developer's control, they had to go back and modify. And to add that undue layer of burden, in my opinion, that coming back through for a revised site plan approval is not the way we should be proceeding our county. I think you just heard Mr. Riley talk about we're trying to figure a way to fast-track projects and fast-track economic growth, not slow it down in our state. So
that brings up a good point, and one that we should probably clarify in here is when we were talking about phasing with DLDOT, it was phasing to building permits. You know, like you're used to it, and we're used to seeing phasing. You know, you've got a section of a mm-hmm. site plan that is a phase 1C.
Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily what we're talking about in here. We're talking about building permits, but that's a good.
But for the common common person, I think the person's going to see that word phasing and want to see the blueprint of what the phasing is. Yeah. If we're talking about building permits, I'm all for it, but change the language.
Yeah, no, that's a good, because it's what you think and what,
right.
Yeah, we'll fix that.
It's a practical side of it.
Yeah.
So other than that, I do support the document. I've never been against it. I just wanted to tweak it where it's workable. And I do want to remind everybody that the stuff does change because the element's out of our control. When I know DLDOT will back me on this, public utilities, i.e. Verizon, Delmarva Power, sometimes Delaware Electric, but public utilities, the relocation of those utilities often drive the schedule of a project. And I'm pretty sure they're shaking their head and they're laughing. They've incurred the same problem that we face on the private side. Thank you.
Thank you. Who would like to speak next? Yes, come on up, please.
Everything that this document's going to control for special use exception, conditional use, rezonings, I assume cluster subdivisions and all through the subdivision process. But going through this, all of them have to go through planning and zoning or whatever for the preliminary site plan or whatever it is for this memorandum. When you finalize this, when you have certain things that never come to county council, why should there be a burden on one subdivision that comes to planning and zoning and then comes to county council? Has two boards to get through to set the phasing or direction that it's going when a cluster subdivision never comes to county council or doesn't, like the past couple that were just done, major ones. So whatever you put in here for regulations or opinions or changing it. I don't believe that once it hits the county council members, you should make any different changes to it versus what planning and zoning does, because that subdivision that only went to planning and zoning stops there, doesn't ever come up to you for the recommendations or changes or put the phase in numbers or control it at all, unless you want to put cluster subdivisions under coming through planning and zoning and then bring them for county council approval. That may be an option, but if you're having one 300 house subdivision or 600 unit subdivision on 300 acres that stops at planning and zoning, and another 300 housing units or 600 units on 300 acres has to go through planning and zoning and county council for some reason, why should the county council put more stipulations or less stipulations versus the one that stopped at the prior level? Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone else like to speak? Ms. Ren? Yes, come on up, please.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You might need to pull the mic stand a bit.
All right, thank you. Thank you. My name is Betty Tustin. I'm a traffic engineer with the traffic group. I reside in Berlin, Maryland, just down the road off 113. I have had the privilege over the last few weeks in working with a team who has developed some comments and recommendations to the planning and zoning. And I have...
Thank you.
These are our comments. I think they were actually submitted to the council yesterday, but what I'm handing out to you now has actually page numbers on it, so it might be a little easier to follow what I'm going to say. But I've been privileged to be part of a team of transportation engineers, civil engineers, developers, and property owners to review the MOU and to provide comments to planning and zoning and now to you. I just want to thank planning and zoning for listening to our comments and incorporating quite a few of them into their revised MOU. But I do want to say that we still have a lot of work ahead of us. And I think Mr. Robertson said at one of the P&Z hearings that this is a work in progress. Even in fact today, Mr. Cote pointed out some things that need to be changed in the MOU. And I have a few more that I think that the council should hear and that planning and zoning should consider. First of all, the traffic impacts are defined in the MOU as diminutive, negligible, minor, and major. And those are very similar to DLDOT's development coordination manual. However, there's an error in the MOU because it uses the word and instead of or. For example, a minor subdivision or a minor impact is a proposed land use which is expected to increase the trip generation of the subject land by at least 50 vehicles in any hour, but fewer than 200 vehicle trips any hour, and at least 500 trips per day. The Development Coordination Manual, the DCM, uses the word or, and it'd be very hard to meet the requirements if you use an and. I could go in the math if you like, but I just wanted to point out that discrepancy. Another discrepancy that I see in the MOU, having done traffic impact studies in the state of Delaware for many years, and if you want to turn to page 5, again, we have a discussion of the minor impact. A minor impact is also, it's not called that in DLDOT's DCM, but they do allow for developments that fall into this trip generation category, an option of paying an area-wide study fee or a fee in lieu. And that parallels what the MOU says. However, DLDOT also allows the developer to choose to go ahead and do a TIS. In some cases, it may be more beneficial for a developer to choose to do a TIS instead of paying into an area-wide study fee. As was said earlier, paying into an area-wide study fee does not preclude a developer from paying into an off-site improvement. So without a TIS, the off-site improvements are determined by DLDOT. So it may be more beneficial for a developer to do a TIS, to have the math, to have the calculations, to determine what the equitable share contributions should be to an off-site improvement. And that option is not specifically identified in the MOU as it now stands. Another discrepancy, as I understand the process with DLDOT, is on page 6, and that refers to the major impact. Again, the major impact is defined in terms of the number of trips that a proposed development is projected to make. And when they hit that threshold, the way I understand the DCM is that a TIS must be done. A TOA cannot be done in lieu of a TIS. And Mark and Drew can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's the way I understand the DCM. So those are some of the discrepancies that I see. There's more, but I just wanted to highlight those. I also want to bring you back to the motion that was passed by the P&Z last week or the week before. And the very last statement is item B. I don't know if you have that in front of you or not, but it says, comments were received about reorganizing the MOU for clarity. And the proposed MOU is organized so that it follows the general format and order of the 1988 MOU, rather than completely writing the document. Well, I emphasize two things, clarity. I think when all the comments that I heard the general public saying when they came up to this podium was, we don't understand it. We don't understand this document. We don't know what it means. And so I think it should be reorganized for clarity purposes, not only for us, the engineers and the developers, but also for the general public. And I also just want to point out, this document is based on a document that was written 32 years ago. And a lot has changed in the last 32 years. In 1988, the population of Sussex County was about 100,000. Now it's about 250,000. That's a lot of change to have occurred in 32 years. In 1988, a gallon of gas cost 91 cents. Costs a lot more today. In 1988, we were just beginning to understand computers. We had computers, but not everybody could afford them. And they certainly couldn't handle the kind of data that we have computers handle today. In fact, I noticed when I was doing my research that a mouse in 1988 cost $89.95. So a lot has changed in the last 32 years, and sometimes you just have to put aside the old and start with new and to reorganize this document for clarity so that the process is understandable, so that it follows the DLDOT process. So I ask you, I urge you not to take action on this document today, that you allow P&Z to rewrite it and put it out for public comment again. And then let's pass a document that we all understand and that we can all follow and that we can all work together on. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Someone else want to speak? Anyone else desire to speak? Mr. Tunnel, and then gentleman in the back. Then.
Good afternoon, members of council. I believe you may have gotten this handout earlier, but I just want to pass it out for my reference.
Thank you.
I was one of the members of the working group, along with Betty, other traffic engineers and civil engineers, that went through the initial document that was presented to Planning and Zoning and discussed at the two hearings. What I'm passing out now is a redline version of that document, and I want to just talk about the reorganization of it. Because before the first public hearing with Planning and Zoning, I was very confused, and the way I read the document and how it was organized based on the 1988 version, and then hearing at the hearing Mr. Cote present what the real intention of it was, it seemed like night and day, like two different things. So after hearing Mr. Cote explain and then getting into understanding the actual intention of the document, us as a group of we started going digging into it and figuring out, are there better ways to redefine it? The first, and we heard from already about the definitions, area-wide study fee versus fee in lieu. We're in favor of changing that to the area-wide study fee and clearing that up and making the DLDOT manual and this document match. And then the red line version you have here, as you go through, there's a few changes to some definitions to better match the current DLDOT manual, make it better and more understanding, and to go through some of the, it reorganizes some of the issues that Betty had brought up earlier. And there's really four sections to this reorganized document. The first section is the process. It starts with the preliminary traffic analysis and then goes through each impact as it's defined, whether it's diminutive, and here's the steps that happen. If it's negligible, there's more steps, all the way up through getting into minor and then major impacts. And so when you read the document, you can say, all right, I've been determined I'm this level of impact, and then it outlines specifically the steps below that impact. And in the current 88 version, those steps are kind of all intermingled throughout the document. So the next, after the kind of the initial process, we took all the elements of the TIS and put them together in one section so that when a TIS is required, it lists those specific things that have to be put in the TIS. And then again, level of service. Level of service is kind of discussed in different sections of the 88 document. We took all the level of service items, reorganized them, and put all the requirements in one section. And then the final is really the biggest change in this current MOU is really strengthening the coordination between DLDOT and the county. And you can find that through all the different sections of, you know, as the red line version that was presented, trying to follow the 88 version. But we took all those coordination items and put them in one section so that both the county and DLDOT, there's a better, more concise list of what should be, what should be each of the entities' requirements, and how they coordinate together. So there's some issues as just reading through the red line comments that I saw this morning that still exist, and there's, you know, Betty mentioned a few, but really when you go to taking away the ability for somebody to opt out of the area-wide study fee and still do a TIS, that's a big issue. That's something that I think you still need the ability as a developer to both have the option to do either one or the other depending on the circumstances. The other issues I found in, I'm jumping back to the red line document outside of the organization, but when you look at the kind of the negotiations and the agreements between DLDOT and everything, there's nothing spelled out in the current red line version when it talks about who should immediately forward the information to Sussex County. Is it DLDOT? Is it the developer? That's not spelled out in the current document. And then in the final site plan coordination, There's a number 3 on line 279 talks about Sussex County shall withhold the issuance of any building permit until DLDOT has issued the entrance construction permit associated with the project. Should this be changed? Because on larger projects, there could be multiple entrances. There could be temporary entrances put in. As Mr. Cote talked about, hammerheads versus the full turn lanes. Is this too restrictive in that sense, and doesn't kind of comprehend much larger development and multiple entrances to a project? So overall, I think, you know, if you compare the red line version of the reorganized document I passed out versus the current red line version, I think you'll see it's clearer. It has the same information in it, really, and it outlines the step-by-step process and kind of the flow of how the traffic analysis starts from the preliminary traffic analysis through the impact and into the coordination. So I ask you to consider that and implement some additional changes into the current document. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Gentleman back.
Thank you. DJ Hughes, 16566 Sweetwater Drive, Milton, Delaware. Generic comment about the preliminary analysis. I believe, if I understand it, it's basically the service level evaluation request form that's submitted now, and DLDOT provides a support facilities report. Am I correct in that interpretation from what you guys understand? That's basically the same?
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Okay. let me fill out my address real quick. All right. As far as page one goes, there's some suggestions I have for adding something, and it says insert paragraph 7. I'm going to give specific language, but the lead into it is there are certain small-scale applications DLDOT does not necessarily fall neatly within the criteria for a DLDOT letter of no contention, DLDOT letter of no objection to recordation or entrance plan approvals. For example, smaller size event venues that primarily host weddings, birthday parties, anniversary parties, but not a daily basis, do not even have daily or even weekly traffic impacts. While they may still require county conditional use, a DLDOT special events permit may be more appropriate for DLDOT requirements considering the use is not daily. So I suggest adding, whereas if DLDOT determines a preliminary traffic analysis that the DLDOT special events permit access is more appropriate than the entrance plan approval process for a specific project, and in parentheses, i.e. a conditional use for smaller scale event venues, primarily host weddings, birthday parties, anniversary parties, etc., that project shall be exempt from this MOU. And the reason being is standard DLDOT entrance can cost $50,000 to $65,000. So if somebody's just having, you know, whatever it may be, want a conditional use, they get the conditional use to host those, to incur that expense on top of all the other approvals, it's just a hefty burden for somebody that could discourage them from doing something like that. So yes, that you consider that. As far as the definitions go, I agree with the conversations on the fee in lieu of. It would be just nice to tidy that up so it is clear that it's an area-wide study fee that you're paying in lieu of a TIS. With respect to some of the definitions for minor, diminutive, I also have a suggestion for diminutive impact, kind of hits on what I just said about special event venues. So after it says no further study or information will be required, I'm suggesting you add additionally for the diminutive impact of uses that do not generate daily or even weekly traffic, DLDOT has the option to refer to the project to DLDOT special events process, which is separate from the county special event process and can still be used as needed for a project requiring a county conditional use. That way there's no confusion between the difference between a special event for DLDOT and a conditional use for the county. For minor impacts, I'm suggesting that at the end of the minor, and I think this kind of hints on what Betty and Robert both said, the developer has the option to pay an area-wide study fee in lieu of completing a TIS. And I agree with the previous comment. Sometimes it may be more beneficial for all parties if a TIS is done or an area-wide study fee is done, depending on the situation. So I think it should be clear that if it's minor, it's not a requirement that you pay the fee, but it is an option in lieu of a TIS. And to maybe further clarify that, in the definition of the area-wide study fee in lieu of, you could add a sentence that says, this applies to the development determined to have a minor impact. For major impact, I know right now the DLDOT regulations do say a TIS is required and the area-wide study fee is not an option if you have over 200 vehicles per hour or 2,080 T. And while that is the case, perhaps maybe if you go with what I'm saying here, doubt I could tidy that up a little bit, but I'm suggesting language that says at the end of major, typically this will require a TIS unless the development is located within a TID. Alternatively, Delta may accept an area-wide study fee in lieu of a TIS and require a TOA at Delta's discretion. An example of that, Osprey Point, I don't know what it's called now, but when I did the TOA for it, it was the redevelopment of Old Landing golf course. And all of us in the room agreed there had been enough studies in the area that a TIS wasn't really appropriate, and a TOA was more appropriate. But the regulations seem to suggest that we had to do a TIS. Now, we were able to come to, you know, an agreement where we did a TOA instead, but I think it'd be better if there's flexibility written into the MOU where it doesn't seem to require something when maybe something else is a better option. And we accomplished the same thing as far as the impacts of the area. I'd also like to emphasize that a TIS not only addresses impacts of the development, but it assesses existing and no-build conditions. So I'm suggesting in the definition after with applicable Delta regulations, comma two, state assess existing and no-build conditions and determine the impacts. The last sentence where it says system needed to the improvements needed to the transportation system in order to, I'm asking that you add address existing and new build conditions and mitigate the proposed development. So it's not just about determining if the development has impact. Sometimes there's existing conditions that are already there. I know I've spoken at length about Kings Highway. That's a good example of where you already have existing conditions that aren't created by the developer or the development. Okay, so for land use coordination six, it says to construct identified roadway improvements or fund road improvements. I don't think the intent is to imply that it would be totally funded, but it might clarify it if it's add an equitable portion of, so, or fund an equitable portion of road improvements is what I'm suggesting there. So there was one that was, I think it was number 14 that was deleted, and it said where measures to maintain operations are agreed upon by a developer, Delta and Sussex County shall assure these measures are carried out. Not sure why exactly that was deleted. It might have been discussed before, but it would be good if there's some kind of tracking mechanism, whoever's responsible for it, that if there's off-site improvement agreements, that it's tracked not only just to make sure the developer is doing what they're doing, but that all parties to the agreement are doing what they're supposed to be doing. You know, DOT has a lot of projects that they have to deal with across the state, not just Sussex County, so sometimes things can slip through the cracks, but there is, you know, at least one example in the area, and I'll go back to Kings Highway, where there is an agreement between Delta and developers, and the developers have done a lot of what they're supposed to do, but for whatever reason, the Delta end slipped through the cracks. So, you know, if we are going to be having all site agreements, monitoring them, and I think there's even something in here about having updates, then I think it would be good to track those improvements to make sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. All right, for rezonings, paragraphs 2 and 3, I think it is. For paragraph 2, for the general impacts of the rezoning, the potentially most traffic intensive land uses permitted should be discussed. If you don't know exactly what you're doing, but you're rezoning to a certain district, then you should be analyzing those worst case impacts, and that's best for everybody involved, whether it's the public, the developer, the county, because if you don't address your highest and best use, and then you get somebody else that maybe comes make you an offer, if you haven't addressed your worst case land use, then you have to go back through the process. So I'm suggesting the language say, whenever possible, DLDOT shall provide as much information about the general impacts of the rezoning upon area traffic and roadways as required in the preceding section prior to the public hearing before Sussex County Planning Zoning. Impacts should consider the most traffic intensive potential uses for a site based on the proposed rezoning, but should also note the impacts are a worst case scenario that may or may not occur depending on the actual development uses and sizes proposed. Also, the next paragraph is three, and there's one thing that I don't know if that was the intent, but is a little concerning, that requires a new TIS for any change in land use, and changes in land use happen all the time for a variety of reasons. You know, you can change, you could have a sit-down restaurant plan, maybe it turns into fast food or vice versa, or maybe you have, you know, a pharmacy and ends up being a bank or whatever. So any change in land use shouldn't require a new TIS, but I'm suggesting it's be reworded to say, whenever DLDOT is approached by a developer with a specific project, in parentheses, known land use size and number location of access points in mind, TIS may be completed for the project as part of the rezoning process, so that information required as part of the TIS may be included in the property or in the record of the public hearings of the rezoning application. Because other possible uses of the property may be permitted under the proposed new zoning, Sussex County is not bound by this information in making a decision on the rezoning. However, if the use that the TIS is based upon changes after the rezoning occurs, the approved TIS shall be evaluated to determine the need for a new TIS or new or updated TIS, and Sussex County shall not approve final site plan for the property until the evaluation and or new or updated TIS is completed with all necessary traffic and roadway improvements determined by DLDOT. So, you know, it may be that you've increased your land use where you do need a new or updated TIS, but in some cases the land use change decreases and then there's really no need typically to do a new TIS. For site plan coordination, paragraph two, this it says any site plan or any plan approvals, and I think it should be referring to final. So it says Sussex County will withhold any site plan approval until DLDOT has approved all necessary road improvements and entrance design. And anybody can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe you can get preliminary plan approval and then your final subject to all the agency approvals. So the way this reads, as I see it, you couldn't even get a preliminary plan approval until all that was completed. And unless my copy was a typo, I believe it says this requirement may be waived by Sussex County for minor amendments to existing plans to change the trip generation by less than 50 trips per day. I'm suggesting that be 500 trips per day, and the reason being that that is consistent with the DLDOT letter no contention threshold. So if I have an existing entrance and I'm changing my land use by up to 500 trips per day, I can get a letter of no contention. There are certain requirements of that, but 50 trips per day is a very low threshold. So I'd suggest you consider 500 there instead. Sorry, I lost track here. For site plan coordination, paragraph four, I think it's a reference off-site improvement agreements that have already been determined as part of the entrance plan approvals. The way it reads now, I don't think it would happen, but if you get to pull your entrance permit and somebody perhaps with the district has something that they want to require, they could possibly require it, even though you might already have the what the improvements are documented as part of the entrance plan approval process. So once you get your approved entrance plans, those should be what is based on the and not, you know, at anything that could potentially change the entrance plan approval or entrance permit construction. So I'm suggesting the language be revised that DLDOT will withhold an entrance construction permit until developers agreed to construct the access points to department standards and provide off-site improvements, in parentheses, if required, detailed and on approved DLDOT entrance plans and or in an off-site improvements agreement finalized as part of the DLDOT entrance plan approvals. That way it's clear at least what can and can't be required as far as off-site improvements if we get to a point where an entrance permit is going to be withheld. For TID, for the paragraph one, this might not necessarily be needed because it is kind of implied, but suggesting that we make it clear for situations where maybe you're in an area where there's not an approved TID, but there is one that's proposed, that it be revised to say, lost my track. In the event that a land use application falls within an approved transportation improvement district, as documented in an approved agreement between DLDOT and Sussex County, the requirements of the TID as set forth in the TID agreement shall supersede requirements set forth. Again, maybe it's implied the way it's written now, but I think it would make it clear, more clear at least. For land use coordination, number five, I believe it's number four, it says DLDOT has authority to make such a determination where based on the full development of the property, and I believe this should be changed to increase traffic of the property. You could have a situation where you have an application before you where you already have existing traffic on a property, and we're typically looking at the impacts are from the change in traffic. So if I'm already generating 1,000 trips per day, if I'm now generating 1,500, my impact is not the 1,500, it's the 500. So I think that should be changed to increase in traffic. Same as the expected average daily traffic of the site will not increase by 500 trips as opposed to exceed. Same example I just used. Another, I think it's now number six under land use coordination. When it's talking about when DLDOT determines whether that a traffic impact will be major, the developer required to conduct a TIS. I think we should add something in there that says whenever a TIS is required, Sussex County should be included in the drafting of the TIS scope of work and should participate in the TIS scoping meeting. Traditionally, and part of the reason is because the county doesn't necessarily have staff that are you know, with traffic expertise or whatever, but the municipalities, I've had two recent meetings where we did TISs in municipalities and they each had a representative there, whereas the county often doesn't. So by the time you get to a public hearing, if there's something that you wanted to hear about or know about, if the TIS has already been scoped and done, that ship's kind of sailed at that point. So if you're included up front, then that could prevent that from happening. A minor thing too, in that same one, it refers to the six-year capital improvement program. It's the capital transportation program. Um, So for, I think most of this has been cleaned up, but where it was talking about the approved TIS, where it says final TIS review letter, but there's also pieces where not only are improvements detailed in the final TIS review letter, but they're detailed in a final TOA review letter or an area-wide study fee letter. So anytime when we're talking about the improvements that are required, I think it should reference all three of those, because it might not be a final TIS review letter. It could be any of those options. I think this was discussed a little bit before, but when it's talking about Sussex County finds there are sufficient reasons why the developer should not be responsible for all or part of measures, it's a little subjective, so I don't know. I mean, I don't think you need to maybe it would be included but not limited to. The example of a grade separated intersection was given before. Expanding a highway from two lanes to four lanes is another example. Those are just not improvements that any typical development that's in front of you guys could take on by themselves. They would be in a contribution mode or maybe constructing part of it. But so those might be sufficient reasons that you guys could reference, and maybe if it's called out, give a couple examples, but say it's not limited to them. And that's pretty much the same as what happens now. And I think number 11 was in the land use coordination was where I was referring to, that it might want to mention the TOA review letter and the area-wide study review letter. Phasing was discussed a couple times, and so what is now, I believe, land use coordination number 12, it was 13, where it talks about phasing and land development. I think it's just say may be recommended by DLDOT as opposed to required, especially at the TIS review letter. This might have been discussed before too, but it's a recommendation at that point, and it becomes a requirement when they do their entrance plan approvals. I'm suggesting where it says to accomplish this, DLDOT should, and delete where it says state what phasing is appropriate, but and change that to clearly define the development phasing in the final TIS review letter, detailing what improvements are required for each phase with the amount of units, square foot, rooms, etc. defined for each phase. I think it would just make it clear for everybody, and then I think that covers, there's a some that says in clearly state phasing requirement, so that could be deleted. I just wanted a little more detail. Also where it says Sussex County may then impose phasing requirements as part of its approval of a land use application, I think that should say final site plan, not the actual land use application. So under what is now number 12 was number 13, but 12B, it says whether required highway improvements are being funded or constructed at developer's own expense. And I think that should be changed to say designed and or constructed at the developer's own expense. And then I think we need to add a C that says whether the required highway improvements are being designed and constructed by DLDOT with an equitable contribution from the developer, because that is often the case that we see where you come in an area where you have a CTP project, just like what you're working with the TID that you have coming up. You know, if you're already in an area where DLDOT's designing, constructing an improvement, you're just basically in an equitable contribution mode as a developer. And the next paragraph where it says the phasing requirements shall be included as a plan sheet at the time of the final site plan, I'm suggesting delete from where it says, however, through TIS process. I think what I'm suggesting before already addressed that. And then move the language prior to the preliminary site plan or other public hearing process so that Sussex County remove that, or move that to the after each phase, where I said each phase, where we're basically clearly defining the phasing agreement. So number 16, I believe it's number 14 now, it talks about DLDOT shall provide regular updates. I think that should be defined with either monthly, quarterly, semi-annual. That way everybody's clear on what we're talking about by regular. And it also should include developer-funded and publicly funded improvements. And I believe I had some specific language. So DLDOT shall provide quarterly updates to Sussex County about the status of ongoing and future roadway and transportation projects in the county, so the County Council and Planning Zoning Commission have an up-to-date understanding of their status. This shall include both developer-funded and DLDOT-initiated and funded projects. Any off-site improvement agreements should be discussed with respect to developer and DLDOT obligations to assure agreements are being followed by both parties. During these updates, Sussex County will also have an opportunity to discuss other transportation improvements that may be needed in the future. Okay, didn't have anything else there. For what is number 19, and now under land use coordination, I believe it's number 17. And instead of saying shall be entitled to participate in any negotiations between developer and DLDOT, I think it should say Sussex County shall be notified of any meetings to discuss the draft final TIS, TOA review letter, or any off-site improvement agreements. The county is definitely welcome to have a seat at the table and make any recommendations, but in the end, it's DLDOT's discretion, and I think I have some language I propose for that. And I swear I'm almost done. All right, well, I couldn't find that language, but basically, I think the point of what I was saying is if the county wants to be invited to the meetings that discuss this, I think they should be more than welcome to attend those meetings. I know you had a couple projects where it wasn't clear on what was required or not required, where the county kind of thought one thing and DLDOT thought another, or there were meetings that the county wasn't aware of, so that could prevent that sort of thing. So if we're talking about off-site improvement agreements or final TIS review, draft final TIS TOA review letters, just if the county's invited, you can depending on the case, you may choose not to come or you may choose to come, you can have input, but in the end, the DLDOT holds the gavel there, so to speak. I think I covered. For site plan coordination, number one, I suggest after the first sentence that replies the subject to conditions, adding these conditions should be based upon off-site improvements agreement between DLDOT and a developer. And I believe that's it.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, do you want to come on down, please? And I think Mr. Hutt has indicated he